494 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode, and today I'm going to be talking about The World of Krypton number one from December 1987, written by John Byrne. We've got breakdowns by Mike Mignola, finishes by Rick Bryant, colors by Petra Scotese, and letters by John Workman. So this is one of four limited series. One of three four-issue limited series that came out in 1987, all written by John Byrne. And this was after Crisis on Infinite Earths in 86. And DC poached John Byrne away from Marvel. He was doing Fantastic Four. He was had just started a run writing and drawing The Incredible Hulk. And with the opportunity to work on the first superhero, Superman, Byrne was lured away from Marvel to come and modernize Superman. And the rest is history, so to speak. What's interesting is DC's approach was to make Superman less powerful. In that way, they felt he would be more relatable. The Superman titles, both Superman and Action Comics, and to a lesser extent, DC Comics Presents, which was a Superman team-up book, had not been selling that well in the early to mid-80s, and it actually had been quite a while since Superman was a best-selling title. So Byrne, a very popular creator at the time, mostly for his pencil work, he was a serviceable writer, but he really made his name as the penciler on the X-Men, working with Chris Claremont, and then taking over both writing and penciling duties on the Fantastic Four. And as I said, he had just started a run on Incredible Hulk. He'd done 28 issues of Alpha Flight, which was, I think, originally supposed to be 6 or 8, and then he expanded it to 12 and then 14, and he just realized he kept having stories to tell with this Canadian superhero team. And then finally, at 28, he was done, and he moved over to the Hulk and did some interesting things there, but he wasn't on the title for very long before he left Marvel and went to DC. He did his Man of Steel series in 86 and then relaunched Superman. He wrote and illustrated Action Comics as well as the Superman title, so pretty ambitious. I mean, that's two monthly books that he was writing and drawing, so you know, that's a lot. And he also was writing the Adventures of Superman book, which originally had been the Superman title. So, you know, for many years since Action and then Superman started, they were the two titles that Superman appeared in monthly. And then when Crisis on Infinite Earths happened, they ended the Superman books, and Action technically went on hiatus. And then when Byrne came over to do his run on Superman, they restarted Action, and Byrne was writing it. And that was it was kind of a team-up book. It was almost a DC Comics Presents, except it was tied a little more closely to the continuity of the other books. So early on, we saw like the Legion of Superheroes show up, Booster Gold show up, Phantom Stranger. It was always Superman and somebody else in the Action book. But again, it continued that legacy numbering. Over in the Superman title, which was a little more focused on kind of the daily planet aspect of Superman's life, we saw that title, Superman, start with a new number one. So just like Bendis, right, when Bendis came over recently here in the last couple months, Action kept going with the regular numbering, starting Superman over with a new number one. But that third title, Adventures of Superman, which had Jerry Ordway on pencils. Eventually, I don't know that he was the artist right to start with the relaunch. I'll have to check on that. But Byrne was writing it, but it was a third book, there's no way he could have penciled it right. So he was just writing that book. But that started, I think it was issue 424. It basically took over the numbering of the previous Superman title. So the Superman title ended with a very famous story in the last two issues by Alan Moore called Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. And as I said, I think it was 422 and 423. And then with Byrne coming over and relaunching Superman, they added on Adventures Of to that Superman title and kept that numbering going. If you've seen the first issue of kind of the relaunch or starting that title back up, it's Superman, the blue background. He's got one of his arms kind of extended, and there's an eagle landing on his forearm, if I remember correctly, kind of going to that all-American look. And the adventure title kind of focused on, in a way, the roots of Superman being fighting for the little guy, fighting for the underdog, equal rights and such. You know, a lot of the early stories, Superman was taking on slumlords and such. So the adventures title, you saw a lot of Suicide Slum stories. That was the same title where we'd see the Guardian show up a lot, Cadmus, that kind of thing. So it was a little more street level. The Superman title was more focused on the Daily Planet and the relationships, as I said. And then the action comic was the team-up book that had the really wild, crazy ideas. So that was what Byrne did when he relaunched Superman. But the other thing that DC did was they had Byrne write these 3-4-issue miniseries that were each focused on a different aspect of Superman's life. Because, again, we had the Man of Steel series that Byrne did that was basically an introduction to Superman. The first issue starts, he's in high school, and we get a little bit of flashback, and we see him kind of debut to the world. He had been helping in secret prior to that. And then once he debuts to the world, he has to let himself be seen. He eventually, you know, takes on the moniker Superman, gets the iconic costume we all know. And then the Man of Steel series marches on from there with snapshots, one focused on Luther, another focused on Bizarro, one focused on Lois Lane, one focused on Batman and Superman's relationship, and one on Lana Lang, which kind of tied into to Smallville itself. But we still didn't have a lot of background. I mean, we knew, obviously, that Superman came to Earth from Krypton, but things had changed, right? He wasn't as powerful. He had never been Superboy. So when you looked back, you know, on that 6-issue miniseries from Byrne, Man of Steel, it was these snapshots of his early days, basically as Superman. We don't get too much of his growing up or his history, legacy, things like that. So DC had Byrne do these 3-4-issue miniseries to kind of flesh out these other aspects and let us understand Superman's world, where he'd come from. So the three miniseries were The World of Krypton, which gave us the history of Krypton from this new version of Superman's perspective. And not that he knew any of this stuff ahead of time, but again, what Byrne came up with when it was time to, okay, this is a different version of Superman. What was the version of Krypton that he came from? What was its history? How did it explode? Give us that story. So that's what Byrne did in the 4-issue World of Krypton series. There was also a World of Metropolis 4-issue series, which focused on, obviously, Metropolis, the history of the Daily Planet, Lex Luthor, all that kind of stuff, and fleshing out what was Metropolis like before Superman actually got there. And then the third was World of Smallville, because again, we didn't get to see Smallville through Superman's eyes as he was Superboy back in the first go-round in the Silver Age, and having those Superboy stories and understanding Ma and Pa Kent and all that. So it was Byrne telling basically these three different worlds, Krypton, where Superman's heritage was, Smallville, where he grew up, and Metropolis, where he lives now. So again, it was a way for Byrne to be able to start where he did with Superman as an already established hero, but still go back and fill in parts of not only Superman's history, but some explanation of the places he had lived or he had been, or what his heritage was, so that we could better understand who he was in Byrne's stories. There was also a 12-issue series called The Kents. I think that was written by John Ostrander, if I remember correctly. I'm not 100% on that. And that basically gave the history of the Kents, as you know, it's called, as they kind of settled in Kansas and where they had come from. I think it starts in the Civil War is where that one starts. So again, these were series that helped to establish a past and the history and legacy and just help us who understand who Superman was in terms of the mid-80s with Byrne telling him telling stories of Superman as an already established hero. So I'm going to start with The World of Krypton number one. As I said, December 1987, Byrne writing art from Mike Mignola and not finished art by Mignola. So I know a lot of you will be familiar with his work from Hellboy, which is a little more, I don't want to say impressionist, but it's not as detailed as this art. He's just doing the layouts here. Or the breakdowns, and then they're being finished by Rick Bryant. So there's a lot more detail. It's still very easily recognizable as Mignola, but I think that he was an excellent choice to illustrate this alien world of Krypton. So it starts out, Krypton looks like an idyllic place. It's summer, the air is rich with all the scents of life and growing love and freedom. And we see a number of Kryptonians flying these, I guess they're kind of like flying cars or kind of chariot. They look like very bird-like, can hold one or two people, open cockpit, and they're flying around and enjoying the summer day. And this first issue of The World of Krypton is called Pieces. And on the first double page spread, we meet young Van L. That's V-A-N hyphen L, not the E-L as we know Kal-El and Jor-El to have. And he's young, he's full of life. He's very happy because today is his day of passage, as it's called. He's come of age and he will be considered after his day of passage ceremony, he'll be considered a man, which apparently bestows on it some other privilege beyond just being a boy. So nothing else fills his mind, it says, as he darts and weaves through the slower skyships. And other Kryptonians recognize him, and they allow themselves indulgent smiles and memories because they remember their day of passage. And then he hears through his communication device someone say, "Ho, Speedy Bird, what's your rush?" And it's his friend Vara. And he remarks how beautiful she looks. And her response is, "You must really be growing up. I think it's the first time you've ever noticed." And Van-El invites her to a picnic. And Vara responds, "Well, perhaps if you can beat me there." And she zooms off with Van-El in hot pursuit, I guess you'd say. But as Vara is flying, she's flying too low. And she crashes. And as Van-El screams out, "Vara!" and then finds her, he finds her among the wreckage. Her body is strewn about in a grove of trees, it looks like. And Van-El says, "Look at you." And Vara's response is, "Don't scold me, Van-El. I'm not in the mood." And Van-El gently lifts her broken body. It says her bright blood is hot against his flesh and he flows faster as he carries her. And he hopes that this won't make him late to the party. So a very cavalier attitude toward this horrific crash, with Vara basically bleeding out. So as Van-El heads to the hospital, there are others in skyships flying around the hospital and they're flashing up signs. One says no more spare parts. Another says full mind, full life. Another says mind for the mindless. And we see Van-El irritated say, "Keep clear, you clonies. I must reach the hospital." And as he docks, the automated system recognizes him, Van-El, son of Ran-El, and Vara, daughter of Ten-R. And we see a robot doctor greet him, ask if there had been an accident. And Van-El responds, "A foolish showing off can be called accidental. Vara is in need of repairs, doctor." So the doctor takes her and says he shall attend to the matter personally and says, "Son of Ran-El, Now, notice here that they're calling him Son of Ran-El, and they're not addressing him by his name. That has to do with the fact he hasn't become a man yet. That passage ceremony that's scheduled for later today. So the robot says, Son of Ran-El, please avail yourself of the guest facilities. I shall report back to you news within the hour. He thanks the doctor, and he heads into the waiting area, basically. And he says, I'm not alone here, I see. You look familiar, citizen. Do I know you? The man turns and says, you would do well to observe protocol and identify yourself first, stripling. Who is your father that he raises such an ignorant whelp? So again, Ran-El is treated as less because he hasn't had his day of passage yet. And he thinks to himself how insolent this person is. Were it only tomorrow, I could tell him more than... And then he responds out loud, I am the son of Ran-El, citizen. Whom do I have the pleasure of speaking? And the other man responds, I am Kanzi, son of Ran-El. My apologies for my temper, but I have much on my mind. And Ran-El thinks to himself, Kanzi, where's your mother? It is so unusual for her to let you stray so far alone. And then one of the robot doctors comes in and asks to be excused with Kanzi, and he has urgent news. And Ran-El says, certainly... Or I'm sorry, Ran-El says, certainly a pleasure chatting with you. And the doctor tells Kanzi, my lord, I have confirmation. And then we hear Kanzi scream no. And Ran-El is thinking to himself, that scream would wake the dead. I wonder what could have possibly. And then interrupting his thoughts, the doctor that took Vara asks Ran-El to accompany him. The daughter of Tenar is repaired and she wishes to see you. So as he enters the recovery chamber, he sees Vara completely healed of her injuries. And the doctor says that he's to be commended for delivering the daughter of Tenar so quickly. Apparently her injuries were more severe than they thought. And it seems that she owes Ran-El her life. But she has to remain immobile for a few hours just to make sure none of the implants are rejected. And as the doctor says that in 1,000 years, he's never had to perform so much reconstructive surgery in a single day on a single person. We see Tenar, the father, show and mention that it's always been his daughter's habit to be different. And he thanks Ran-El for getting his daughter there so quickly, and then does say, oh, or am I premature to address you by your name? When is the hour of your passage? And Ran-El responds that it's not for a little while yet, but thanks him for the compliment. Also, Vara makes an observation here that's pretty important. She talks about what nonsense it is that there's all these rules, like you can't address a child by his name. It's always son of, and women seem to have lesser rights too. She says out loud, one would almost think men were made differently from women. So much fuss is made of their coming of age, but such is not the case, is it, doctor? And the doctor responds, no, there's no substantial difference in biology, my lady. And Tenar's response to that is, you have no heart for tradition, daughter. And then asks after Ran-El's parents, and asks that Ran-El pass along his greetings. Ran-El agrees and heads home to find his mother standing worriedly at the window and asks what's wrong. She tells Ran-El that she has not heard from Ran-El in many hours and to turn on the telecom to see the news from Kandor. When he turns it on, he sees robots firing on Kryptonians firing on each other, and he's shocked by it and says it cannot be. And then a voice from off panel says, but it is, and it's Ran-El, Ran-El's father returning home. Mother is very happy to see him, and she said, I despaired of ever seeing you again. Ran-El says, I was worried too. Fighting broke out just as I was preparing to leave Kandor. And Ran-El wants to know what the fighting was all about. And it has to do with the clones. And Van El's mother is not really happy with him. She says, how can you be worried about yourself? Kryptonians are fighting and dying. And Van El's response is, yeah, but the Robo Police have the clonies well in hand. And Van El responds, don't apologize. The debate over clone rights has been growing since before you were born. It's not surprising you can't give it much worry, especially today of all days. So later in the Great Hall, we see the party for Van El's passage, and Vara is there, Van El telling her how wonderful she looks and how he can't believe it was only this afternoon that, and Vara cuts him off saying, don't speak of this, tonight is your night, and after the rites, I have a special gift for you. Meanwhile, we see a debate on the floor with Ranel saying, I cannot agree with you, Ganim. There's much more at issue than the rights of mindless clones. And Ganim responds, you speak in grand phrases, but as ever, you speak like a politician. You talk about caution when there's already Kryptonian blood running in the streets, all for the sake of clones, beings whose blood is as red as ours because it is ours. And another male at the party, Han T, says, Ganim is right. We've practiced an abomination. We must grant full rights to clones immediately. And another woman says, you oversimplify. Ranel is speaking again. Please listen. And Ranel is talking about for tens of thousands of years, they've used clone technology to prolong their lives. And if you want to live longer, there's going to be a price. He says, you yourself have been replenished more times than I can count, Han T. And, you know, it's that very prolonging of life that gives you the strength and vigor of youth that you've maintained, and it's what makes their present culture possible. If they abandon the clone technology, they have to face the inevitability of age and death. And not only that, then they admit that what they've been doing is wrong, which is admitting that they're a race of murderers and perhaps even cannibals, if you look at it that way. They're harvesting body parts of other living beings to prolong their life. And his response is, you charge your words with too much emotion, Ranel. You're trying to frighten us from the right path with vague threats and taunting at our consciousness. And then we see someone off panel ask for attention. And it's Nira. Nira is the mother of Kan Z, who we met earlier, who found something out at the hospital and let out that blood-curdling scream. So she's asking after her son, but first she congratulates Van El and says how happy she is to mingle her own joy with the joy of Van El's passage. And she also announces to all the gathered friends and fellow Kryptonians there that her son Kan Z is to be married, and the joining will take place on the first day of Autumn Festival. And I do want to point out here that you have to remember these people have lived for thousands of years. So things like marriages, it takes on kind of a different meaning. I mean, you marry somebody that lasts like a really long time. Relationships, family alliances, everybody knows everybody because they've been alive so long. So it's a much different culture. So as others in the crowd begin to congratulate Nira, one of the women is thinking, I never thought you'd find anyone good enough for your precious baby boy. So again, there's more than meets the eye here, because it definitely seems like Nira is extremely attached to her son based on the way other people are always thinking these comments. So above the crowd, we see Vara and Van El talking about Kan Z getting married. And Van El's thinking about just seeing him this morning and how he didn't look very happy. So wondering about the marriage idea. And then they're interrupted by a lot of noise and commotion. And Vara's thinking, what's that terrible row? And it's Kan Z. He says, out of my way, I say, where's my mother? Where's the witch? And someone remarks that he's drunk. And at that moment, he Kanzi spots his mother and goes stalking over to her. And she says, "Kanzi, beloved son, what's wrong?" And he screams at her, "Wrong? You dare ask me such a question? You dare, betrayer?" And meanwhile, Van L is running toward Kanzi, but Kanzi pulls out a blaster and says, "No, you stop, son of Ran-El. Stop. Or receive your own share of," and he pulls the trigger, kills his mother, and then puts the gun to his own neck, and he's about to kill himself, as he says, "It is done, and now I join you, mother, join you in the only way we can ever be together after what you did." But Van-El manages to tackle him and keep him from killing himself, and the rest of the Kryptonian men grab and hold him, but Kanzi is out of his mind, screaming, "No, no, let me go, let me die." So later at the party, as the, you know, everyone has left and the robot doctors are there, one of them remarks that the complete destruction of Lady Nira's head and brain precludes any hope of repair and or reconstructive surgery. So she truly is dead. And the robot says, "This is most disturbing." Ran-El agrees and says that there hasn't been such an act of personal violence in thousands of years. And one of the robots says, "Forgive me for disagreeing, but this is actually the second such act perpetrated by Kanzi in as many hours. They've just come from Kanzi's house, and the fiance was murdered there, Kyla of House N-R, E-N-N-R. And Van-El responds, "Both since this morning. I could tell he was unbalanced when I saw him at the hospital, but I had no idea he would do this." And the robot responds that Van-El shouldn't be blaming himself. There's no way he could have anticipated the actions. And in point of fact, he may have provided the only obvious clue. They're going to investigate what happened at the hospital that may have precipitated Kanzi to behave like this. And Ran-El says that he shall accompany the robot doctor to find out, as this matter concerns him greatly. He somehow senses there's more to this murder. And now that Van-El is an adult, he will go as well. He must learn what this all means. So as the dawn is beginning to break on the world of Krypton, they head to the hospital, to the clone banks, and Ran-El tells his son to pay close attention. It's very rare for a living soul to be permitted in these regions. And Ran-El remarks about how cold and dark it is, and that it's necessary because it's a preserving cold and darkness. Through these doors lie all our hopes and dreams, Van-El. Through these doors lies the future. So great row when Van-El sees it, and it's the clone banks. And it's a repository of the ages, the chamber where they each store three clones for every man, woman, and child on Krypton, ever tended by silent, watchful sentinels, maintained in perfect physical condition, sleeping their dreamless sleep in case any limb or organ is needed to repair the matrix of their cells for one of the living Kryptons. So when they go to the clone bank that's supposed to hold the three clones of Nira, they see that one of them is missing. And they find out that the clone was actually removed by order of Mistress Nira herself, which is breaking Kryptonian law. It's treason. And the doctor said she expressed some need of it. And this is very concerning to Ran-El. He said the laws of Krypton forbid the removal of full undamaged clone for any reason. For Nira to have done this is a crime nearly as great as that of her son. And one of the robot police drones shows up and says perhaps even greater than Kanzi's crime, because they've just received communication from their central office that the cellular matrix of the murdered girl is identical to that of Nira. Kanzi's bride-to-be was his mother's clone. And Van-El is like beside himself. He's like, that's monstrous. That's obscene. So Nira's obsession with her son was so sick in a way. So she was so obsessed that she wanted to marry him, basically, and took her fully developed clone and passed it off as someone else to marry her son. And when her son found out, you know, he killed both the clone of his mother and his mother and attempted to kill himself. So beyond the obscenity of that, Ranel's concern is if word leaks out of this that a clone was allowed to develop its own mind and personality, what would people think, right? Like, as far as the Kryptonians that are alive believe is that these are mindless, soulless organ donors, basically. But what Neera did was take one of her clones out, allow it to be awake, and sure enough, it's got a mind, it has intelligence, it has a personality, probably a soul. And so now you just open up a can of worms to all these Kryptonians that basically anytime you get hurt and need to use the body of one of your clones, it's a person that's being killed so you can continue living. But unfortunately, the genie's already out of the bottle as the robot drone responds that that's already happened. Kanzi left a time-delayed suicide message explaining his actions. We did not learn of it until after it had been transmitted. All of Krypton now knows this. And Ranel says, then the die is cast. The fates can no longer be denied. This means war. You know, you already had that resistance that believed that these clones were that needed to be freed, that they were being they were living beings that were being mistreated and abused. And again, now that the cat's out of the bag and all of Krypton knows that these are living beings that, you know, are fully developed. They have minds, they have personalities, and they're basically being held in prison, in stasis, to be used as body parts. And it's somewhat of an abomination. So, again, there's already has been the resistance. So you can only imagine, how much support that resistance is going to get. And, you know, even at the party with the high society of Krypton, there was a debate. There were those among them who felt that it was wrong. But what's the answer, right? Because as Vanel said, or Ranel rather, the father, the only way they were able to get to this advanced level of technology was by being so long lived, right? When, you know, there's something to be said for being able to pass on knowledge through learning and history. But there's something more to be said for the fact that if you have the same person working on a problem for thousands and thousands of years, working on developing technology for thousands and thousands of years without loss of knowledge and you know, loss of basic understanding, you're going to develop faster and you're going to develop more advanced technology, right? Because you don't have that period of time where it takes somebody new to learn it, right? Like if you work on something for thousands of years, you're probably going to figure it out one way or the other. I try to solve a problem for thousands of years, you're going to come across the best solution just through trial and error. So they would be giving up a lot to give up their clones, but at the same time, they're living beings. And it certainly seems like these Kryptonians, you know, they're in the right place as far as, you know, they're a functioning society. They're not savages. They don't seem warlike. You know, there's the mention that there hasn't been a murder in thousands of years. So clearly they're doing a lot of things right, but there's always a price to pay. So interesting start to the series, I guess you'd say. Interesting choice that Byrne has made here to explain Krypton's advanced technology, and certainly a lot more to come with this series. So that's going to do it for this episode of Superman Sunday. I will get back to the world of Krypton probably in a few weeks. Didn't have a new issue of Superman to talk about, and didn't have a new issue of Supergirl to talk about either. So I thought it would be fun to go back and check out these series that give a lot of background on the Byrne version of Superman. Obviously, it's been many years since this has come out, over 30 years since this has hit stands. So There have been some changes to Krypton since. You know, most recently we saw Krypton ever so briefly in Bendis's Man of Steel. So I don't actually know what is considered canon right now as far as the history of Krypton. But for me, being that Byrne's Superman is really what I would consider to be my Superman, this version of Krypton is what I consider to be my version of Krypton as well. Another thing to consider is that there's the Krypton series that came on Sci-Fi recently. I haven't seen it. I've heard so many good things. So many people have told me as a Superman fan that I should be watching it. So maybe I'll try to make some time for that. But I am curious to see how that version of Krypton compares to this version of Krypton, because I did win a prize pack. I don't know if I talked about this on the podcast or not, but in the 10 days prior to the Krypton series debuting on Sci-Fi, every day at 5 Pacific, I think it was, DC did a trivia contest. DC and Sci-Fi Channel did a trivia contest where you'd answer questions about Superman and Krypton. And if you got a high enough score, I think they took like the 5 or 10 highest scores each day, and you got a prize pack. So I did win one of those prize packs. It was really cool. It had like a shirt and a Krypton shirt and a Superman pop figure and a phone charger, like a portable phone charger that looked like the key that is in Man of Steel with the emblem from the House of El. So that was really cool as well. The other thing it had in it was it had a trade paperback of John Byrne's World of Krypton. So that tells me that that series must at least take some inspiration, if only slightly, from this World of Krypton series. So I am curious to check it out. As I said, it's a matter of making time. And if I do check it out, I'll be sure to let you listeners know what I think. So I think that's going to do it for this episode of Superman Sunday. The last thing I want to do is give a shout out to John Paul Lopez. The reason this episode is coming out so late is I just got back from Long Beach Comic Con today. I was at the show yesterday. And, you know, long drive back to Phoenix. But when I was at the show yesterday, I did have John Paul, who's a listener, and his favorite episodes we do are the Superman Sunday episodes. So it was great to meet John Paul, hooked him up with a Comic Source lanyard, took a selfie, and he discovered the podcast through Todd Knock, which he didn't mention when I talked to him, but did tweet me later. So I don't know if Todd retweeted or if Todd mentioned, but props to a friend of the show, Todd Knock, for helping us grow our listener base. And as I said, it was awesome to talk to John Paul. It's always great to run into listeners. So keep listening, John Paul. We really appreciate the support. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The next show I'm going to be at is probably going to be LA Comic Con. That'll be Halloween weekend. There is still a slight chance that I will be going to New York Comic Con, which I believe is either the first or second weekend in October. I probably won't, just because I just don't know that I can get the time off of the day job. Everybody tells me I really need to go to New York. It's very much a comic-focused show. I just haven't been able to make it work. So if not this year, next year for sure, I'll try to get out there. But I definitely will be at Los Angeles Comic-Con in October, at the end of October. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.